The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not reflect the views or endorsement of any entity. Nothing being said on this podcast should be considered as investment advice.
GM, GM, hello, friends, family, NFT collectors, moonbirds, mythics, crypto dip butts, whoever else is out there. Just wanted to say hello. I'm Kevin Rose. This is 100 Proof, your weekly variety show where we cover all things NFTs along with some other stuff as well, which I don't know what that would be, but it's mostly NFTs.
All sorts of random stuff. We're in a new location, dude.
Yeah, shoes as well. Amanda has a good point. Can you hear her?
I can hear her a little bit.
Okay, so we're having some slight technical things, but we'll work it out. Dude, we're live. This is what happens when you go live.
I think people are going to want to know, why are we in a place that looks different?
Yes.
So where are we?
It's a great question. Yeah, we are at the new downtown LA Foundry, which is where Proof has been shooting pretty much all week our latest grails.
It's gonna be awesome.
So you've been in here. You've seen all the artists. There's a lot to get excited about.
A lot to get excited. We also have a couple other co-hosts with us today. Shoot it over to them.
Let's do it. We got Amanda, who's our Proof culture and community head. Welcome, Amanda.
What's up? How's it going, guys?
and next to you is Eli, of course, Proof's head of art. Eli?
What's up, guys? This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's gonna be awesome. You can see they have one ear exposed because we were getting a little bit of echo in the headphones, but it's all good. We'll figure it out. Awesome. So in later on in the show, Eli has a great interview coming up with Mitchell F. Chan. You're definitely going to want to check out. They're going to be discussing the journey becoming a digital artist and then also the Boys of Summer collection. The whole background on that artist, which they have a really early collection that is like insane. It's like 70 ETH or something because they were so OG and original.
2017?
Yeah. It's crazy. So we'll hear that story. Also, a lot of stuff to talk about today.
We've got CT put together a really fun calendar for us. We've got, I think, 5 or 6 topics. We're just going to run through a bunch of stuff in the NFT space.
We've got the Grails updates. We've got Sam Spratt, new game that he has out. New Squiggle Mints are huge. Those just got dropped and some great ones came out of there. So we'll be covering that. And then also Beeple's new punk that he purchased. And of course, Crypto Dick Butts, I said at the beginning of the show.
We'll talk about CDBs. We'll
talk about that. Something crazy is happening in that community right now, which we'll see. One of us may be the owner of the project by the end of this episode.
It'll be a fun debate. And when Kev sees some crazy experience like this going on, his eyes light up.
I love it.
Fun to chat through.
All right. And lastly, do not forget to subscribe to Signal, our brand new newsletter from Proof. You can find it at signal.proof.xyz if you want a newsletter that is packed full of great information about what Proof is up to. And also there's Amanda, you wanted to talk about this for like 30 seconds?
Sure, why not?
Tell us about
it. It's been a lot
of fun. You've been working on that,
I can't believe Mao actually gave me a show. but it's 3 minutes of everything that's going on in the Proof ecosystem, as well as like a really cool opportunity. If you're part of the community, if you are an artist doing something really cool, let me know and I will shout you out. That's kind of cool. So it's been a lot of fun. We've had two episodes already, and it's been cool.
Yeah, those have been amazing.
Yeah. And there was a little art in the actual newsletter, right? We had a little art piece.
The curator Clara Pei commented on Grails and the way that in art history, there's this notion of separating art from artist. So check that out in the newsletter version of the Signal.
Yeah. Awesome. And then Eli, you want to chat about the Grails 4 release? Because I know you've been hard at work at this. What's the latest?
Yeah, it's been a crazy, busy couple of weeks. I'm going to just take these off. This is almost unbearable.
Fuck it.
It's been a crazy couple of weeks. The show is coming together, I think, incredibly well. We have, I think, 19 of 20 of the artworks on the website now. Mint passes, we're seeing them on the screen here. And I think Grail 1 just went up recently.
Refresh.
I'm incredibly happy with the quality of of actual artwork, so that I never know exactly what the artist will contribute. But I asked them this season really to investigate that theme of truth and identity. And I think you can see in the outputs that many of them took that very seriously. And we'll find out on the reveal date on August 11th the way that these works really express parts of themselves and that theme. So I'm very, very happy with the outcome and the curation so far. Mint passes are live. We've been giving a few away throughout the week with some partner communities on our spaces yesterday. Mm-hmm. So that's been great. And then minting opens August 7th. And yeah. We've been busy, as you know, and Derek knows, and Kevin knows, over the last few days filming. So, you know, we were in this space, Kevin, as you said, all day last Friday, filming the reveal show. Mao, Hayden, Vanessa, Janet, our team here really up-leveling everything we do on the reveal side. And Mao has started sharing some of those artist videos with me, some of the early edits.
Yeah.
They look so good. He and his team are just unparalleled in their quality. So cannot wait to tell those stories on August 11th.
Yeah, and I can't wait for the live reveal too. We're gonna have, you know, if you have a Girls Mint Pass, you can come in and watch the reveal with us. I asked Maggie to bring us some mimosas. We're gonna have a good time. We're gonna do some live reveal shots and have people, you know, react to it all. It's gonna be a lot of fun.
When you say shots, you mean?
Not actual shots.
No, thank
not
you.
Actual shots. Yes, just live review. Live
you never know.
The responses to it all. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And this morning I asked Eli. I was like, "Can we give away a mint pass? Like, let's just do it." So
this is classic Amanda,
classic,
by the way.
Classic. Why not? Why not? So he was like, "All right, come up with a good question." So I have a little trivia question that we'll give away, and then the first person to answer it will win. So stay tuned towards the end of the show.
I love it. Okay, back to you guys.
All right.
I'm going to put it out into the universe. I think there should be shots or alcohol as part of the Grails reveal process.
I mean, it won't be the first time something like that has happened here at the company. I will say also, for people that want a shortcut to see all of the different art, just head on over to grails.art. That is a place, a little short domain. It'll take you right there, and you can see all the latest. All right. Let's get into it. So, first story of the day, the new game by Sam Spratt, Monument Game.
This is cool.
Yeah, please.
I think Eli, you want to take this one first and kick us off with Skulls?
A little bit. So, I mean, I think most people listening and watching will know who Sam Spratt is.
Mm-hmm.
He's really been the digital artist of the moment in many ways over the last, let's call it 6 months, 8 months. With the skulls of Lucci.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are 50 of those skulls, and there are almost 50 unique owners. So there's maybe 48, 45 unique owners of those 50 skulls. And these were initially distributed to people who bid on Sam's One of One. So this was like a very early version of the bidder's edition.
Yeah.
So Sam was already innovating and thinking through, and I think this is sort of the thread through everything Sam does, this meritocracy in terms of building community,
yeah,
right? So
yeah.
Like,
or a cabal, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, really building a tribe.
Yes, a true tribe.
Yeah, in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
So it started with the one of ones, these bidders edition skulls,
mm-hmm.
And then ultimately it's led into what he's calling the monument game.
Yeah.
And Sam and I spoke a couple months ago, and he was telling me about some of these mechanics. So it's been really interesting to see this now be announced, and we've seen over the last week or so that each of those skull holders, again, which they're around 50, were empowered to select one person
mm-hmm.
who would get to participate in the monument game. We don't know exactly what that participation looks like, but it's been super interesting to see those who have been announced and are now brought into that tribe.
Yeah, I mean, the FOMO is next level. Like, I think I saw Ed Balloon get one. I was like,
yeah.
Come on, man. I don't have any friends. You can't hook me up. I think I saw Nucci, actually,
yes.
Which is, you know, one of our old friends in Proof, a collector. He got one, and I'm like, where are my friends? What do I got to do, Eli? Eli, hook it up.
I'm with that one as well. But just to double-click back into that point around meritocracy and really, you know, with NFTs, generally, one can enter and exit a community on the secondary market as they desire. If they're willing to pay the price that an NFT or a token is listed, they're in the community.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Sam has been very intentional at each stage of this process, both with the distribution of the skulls initially, and then saying those skull holders, based on merit, go choose one other person, and we're going to expand this community.
Yeah.
I love that thoughtfulness. And my instinct is that the next phase of the Monument game will expand that meritocracy in an interesting way. So I just love that very conscious, thoughtful community building that Sam is doing.
I think that's what you have to do during a bear. Like, you have to continue to reward, I guess, you know, those people who are engaged, people who are still showing up every day. This is where, you know, you find the gold, right? And speaking of gold, right? Bat Soup Yum got some gold this morning, right? Yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah, I can talk about that for a moment.
Yeah.
I think Bats got a skull for 15 ETH or something on secondary. Yeah, we're pulling it up. NFT stats.
Yeah.
Sam had this post here. So this was this morning. A skull for 15 just kills me. That pains me.
Yeah.
That, but I'm happy Bats got it. Bats is an amazing collector, of course. The only thing that I would say here in sort of riffing on how this happened, you know, this is something, Derek, you and I have spoken about a decent amount. It's insane to me that a Grail token like this, an NFT of this quality.
It's so beautiful, too.
It's a beautiful piece.
Yeah.
Just visually, it's a beautiful piece as well.
Yeah.
But that this could go to auction or be set at a buy now price in this little corner of the internet where Bats just happen to find it, right? Like, I feel like a piece of art of this quality merits really a lot of context and product. Like, you could really package this and get it in front of the right collectors more effectively than, you know, there's a buy now price on Super Rare, and if you happen to know, you can go find it.
Yeah, like I mean, you don't ever want to shell shame anybody. Like, maybe that person just really needed the money, but I think it's really wild that I feel like they probably could have gotten a lot more for it if they had just
said
something or done something.
Oh my God, yes.
But you know what? Good for him.
Yeah, I think I saw Sam say that this was the only holder amongst those 50 or so skull holders he had never been in touch with. So I think this person was a little disconnected from everything happening, but I mean, Bat's got a great deal. That's an amazing skull. 15, that's just wild.
Yeah.
Kevin, I know you've been skull searching. It's too bad you didn't scoop this one.
Yeah, I mean, this to me is just super depressing. Thanks, Eli, for bringing this one to the show. This is clearly someone that was just like, oh, I haven't looked at NFTs for a couple of years or whatever, however long this collection's been out, and is like, sell it for 15. Because I think, what was the last one before this, 45?
I think it was higher than that.
Was it higher than that? Yeah, so it was just, you know, crazy. Maybe they were taking some type of lost harvesting or something. Who knows what they paid for it.
This is why you gotta. I think Eli said it best. You just kind of, you got to be wired in, or there needs to be tools in place to help people wire in a little bit better and bring context to some of this stuff. Because the seller, they couldn't have picked a worse time. I mean, this project is really just starting to, from a narrative perspective, really get going, and the community is now getting involved in a very big way. So it's a disappointment to see the seller sell at this price point.
Yeah. Well, congrats to the buyer. I mean, that's a great pickup. And speaking of new kind of craziness in the, I guess this isn't new, that was an old one, but we have some new Chromie Squiggles.
We do. We got some new Squiggles. So to set the stage, just for folks that are grokking this for the first time, when Snowfro created the Chromie Squiggle project in November of 2020, after about 4 months, it was clear that the project was about to mint out. So mints were coming in quite quick. I think it got to about 9,100 or 9,200 mints out of the 10,000 that was set as kind of the final resting point for the total collection size. And he paused the minter. Mm-hmm. And over the last year and a half, Snowfro has been squiggle by squiggle giving them away to contributors of the Artbox community, people who are doing good deeds in the Web3 space, folks like museums and galleries, and putting on small auctions as donations for organizations that he feels are enriching the world in some meaningful way. And we are now at the end of the process. So
how close are we to the end? How many are left now?
I want to say that there's something like 50 or 60 or 70 that are left. But
still a lot of squiggles.
It's still a lot of squiggles, but he's been giving them away, or he's been doing these last reveals in chunks of 50. I need to double check how many exactly are left, but there's of the, let's call it 800 or 900 that that he had kind of set aside. We are here towards the end, and I think his intent is to have them all minted out by the end of the summer.
That's so awesome.
And so we are here at the end, and this was one of the big mints that just went out, and there were some cool squiggles in here. I know you've got a couple favorites from this pile, Kev. You want to chat about some of them?
Yeah, I mean, I love the ghost. The ghost, so cool. Type squiggles where you can barely see them, or sometimes you just see the primary dot and then the rest of the body's gone. Totally. And so these to me are the ones that, you know, you clearly know. So the thing with the squiggle is that I've had collectors that are new to the space. If you're in it, you know exactly all the attributes and the rarity and the scarcity and all that. But yes, if you're just a collector looking from the outside looking in, oftentimes you could say to yourself, well, they all kind of look the same, right? Mm-hmm. But the nice thing about a bold is that it doesn't look the same as the you know, most squiggles. And then obviously when you see a ghost, you're just like, oh, that is completely different. Something's wrong with that one. Yeah. Why is that different? So I really like the ones that stand out in some way. And for me, obviously, the ghosts are huge.
Yeah, and the reason this happens is because the rib, which is one of the, you know, the six core visual aesthetic rarities that exist for squiggles, has a special type of trait, which is like the body. And there are these preset backgrounds that come with the squiggles that if you press spacebar, you can see the squiggle move. And if you click your mouse, you can see the backgrounds change. This was all built into the project.
It's the other way around, by the way. Spacebar changes the background. Mouse.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Yeah. Thanks for the catch. And what's happening with the ghost is when the body of the ribbed squiggle is the same color as the starting background color, which is like this very specific white, that you'll see the body of the ribbed squiggle just blend right into the background. Mm-hmm. And then a harmonic is when that same feature happens for all of the other background colors that Snowfro programmed into the project. But the ghost is a very specific type of harmonic because it's the starting color of the background of the squiggle project. And so very statistically rare for this kind of ghost harmonic to exist.
Yeah, and the fact that we're just nearing the very end of this in the last 100 and we'd see, you know, basically, I mean, not two completely perfect ghosts, but it looks like two, one in a harmonic,
yep,
appear is pretty rare.
Definitely. Yeah, I don't think, I know the SquiggleDAO guys have been doing a ton of data research and projections on like what we would see as we came towards the end. And I don't think a couple of harmonics were part of the plan here. So it's fun to see these break out of the brackets a bit and see some cool stuff.
Yeah, very cool. I love it. And I know that a lot of collectors, maybe not so much these days, but back in the day, I know some high-end collectors were like, well, I don't necessarily want to invest in a high-end squig because there are so many unminted still. Mm-hmm. And if you think about like the total supply, imagine you're going for something that is one of five and you're like, well, this could be one of eight or one of 10 as these mint out, right?
Totally.
And so now once we'll have some closure here, we'll know exactly the scarcity and rarity of every single squig, which will be huge for the high-end collectors.
It's huge for the project.
Yeah.
And I've talked to a few of these collectors and future collectors, and I think everyone is very excited as we near the end of the project and the minting because the probabilities all get put into concrete. Everything stays the same, and that economic certainty that you have around what you're, you know, buying and collecting is just like, it's much more grounded than in previous years or months. So I think folks are very excited as we near the end of the summer to see the rest of the collection mint out.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. We should say the last one is going to LACMA too.
Yes.
So
the last one is
very last mint is going out.
Oh, has
to
that been announced
museum
already?
Yes. Yeah, so we're going to have to do some sort of a proof LA event out at LACMA once they take possession of that final mint.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
LACMA is very near and dear to my own heart, having grown up in Los Angeles, and it's great to see an institutional museum like this collect what I consider to be such an awesome, you know, embodiment of what we're all doing here in this space.
Yeah. Awesome.
Shout out to Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we can.
Yes.
Barely. All right. Barely. Sorry.
Okay. Shout out to Wayne, who wants to remind me about the sadness of owning a ribbed and being like five, like spots away from actually having a harmonic. It's so sad. But what I'm actually as a ribbed owner, what I'm excited about is that I'm seeing every time we have new mints, there's very few ribs. So I'm excited for them to like fully mint out so that we can see where the ribs actually kind of go on that list. And I know that Snowfro says the ribs are his favorite. So basically, yes, I'm pumping my own bags. I'm really hoping that ribs just really kind of stand out and come out as the best trade ever. No worries.
Eli, how many actual Chromy Squiggles do you own? Do you own any at all? Or I think you have one, right?
I have two.
I have two. So I have a Day Zero, and that was my first NFT I ever bought.
Well done.
And
then
for one ETH, right?
Yeah, for one. So it wasn't that early. And then I have a fuzzy that I got through the Venus over Manhattan mint. A beautiful fuzzy, which I love.
I love fuzzies.
And I think those were minted for 5 ETH or something.
Yeah. He's the reason why I have one. He's the one who told me about it. So very, very grateful to you. That was the only good alpha you've ever given me, but it's good. It's good.
Awesome. Well, let's move on to the next story. This one, it was a fun one.
Beeple
tweeted out that he was in the market for a CryptoPunk and wanted suggestions on which PFP CryptoPunk he should go with. Now, was his original tweet asking for a PFP or just a CryptoPunk? I'm curious, CT, if you could find that original.
We should try and pull this up. I thought it was a PFP.
You know, what's a good PFP? I've never actually owned a PFP. I kind of want it.
Okay.
And then, of course, all the CryptoPunk maxis just absolutely went nuts on him. And it makes sense. It makes sense for Beeple to own a CryptoPunk, I think.
And it looks like Beeple, which is cool. It's nice when people always get one that looks like them, which is great. All jokes aside, though, Beeple, the only problem I have is that you said it was supposed to be your PFP, and I don't think he's changed it. Is Beeple still like his like picture of his face? Yeah, there he is, right there. He hasn't changed. You're supposed to use it as your PFP. And CT, you're not following Beeple? What is going on? How are you not following Beeple?
Oh man!
Sorry. Okay. Just call that.
We're writing wrongs on the show today.
That's right.
That's
insane. Right. I apologize.
One thing I will say is like, I think Beeple has had this profile photo since like his very first everyday, way back when.
Yes.
And so it would be a big deal for him to change it to flip it to a punk. Although I think
you kind of have to do it.
Or at least, put it. I mean, it would mean a lot to, I think, the space and to, the folks that are here day after day. These everydays he's done lately are actually
so
super
good.
Cool. I love them. But I think the call to action here, I think that you're bringing up, is he should really flip it to his punk.
Yeah, I mean, at least for a bit. But, I mean, these are just so good. He's so talented.
Yeah.
It's just insane.
These are awesome.
I love his mind, how it translates that pixel art into that crazy humanoid creature thing. Awesome. Well, congrats, people, on the sale. And then also, obviously, another massive, massive zero trait sale.
This is a fun one. For folks that don't know, there's actually some like parallels between this and the Squiggle project. But there are these, let's call it like unintended traits that kind of have like invisible traits that you could say that kind of have pervaded the project in the same way it has for Chromy Squiggle. And this is called a zero trait punk. And in fact, these are more statistically rare than the aliens. There are 9 aliens in the CryptoPunks collection. There's only 8 zero trait punks in the entire collection.
Wow.
They don't trade for as much. I think it gets back to this idea of like people.
I mean, 500 ETH is not.
500 ETH is a
no
lot.
Joke.
But, aliens, which are, there's one more alien than there are zero traits, tend to trade. I think the last one went for $10 million or $15 million. So these trade for a high value and people love collecting like these, these category of traits that, that kind of pervade the project in like unintended but consequential ways. So it's fun to see this corner of the market picking up again.
Who bought this one? Do we know?
I don't know. This just happened, I think.
I like when people buy traits.
Actually, I do know.
Oh, you do?
I know. Yeah, it was an account called Token Angels.
Token Angels.
At Token Angels. And they, I think their bio just says that they're like a non-investor. And they tend to buy like a lot of really cool crypto art, but they're not super active. Yeah, there it is. I think CT posted it. Or she's looking it up. Yep. Mm. Lone Wolf Collector Angel Investor.
That's very
They're just kind of chilling.
Yeah. I mean, it's... I like you. You bought your punks. Looks like you.
My punk. I like. But yeah, I like.
That could be Aaron Wright from Flamingo Dow.
Yes,
he could have. He could have rocked that one.
He could. This looks like Aaron a little bit. Aaron's punk also looks like Aaron.
Does it?
I think so. What I remember.
We have to pull up Aaron's profile at some point. Aaron's amazing. Well, that was that's awesome. I mean, punks to me, it's still in a category of its own.
Totally.
It's like, you know, all the collections have slid at this point. I'd be curious to look at the punks chart now. Were we still in the 50s with punks or what?
We're still, I think we dipped below the 50s. But okay. I mean, there's still bids. Like we're still seeing, you know, we saw a bunch of hoodies trade this week.
Yeah.
I think it was like 150 ETH to 200 ETH. We're seeing, you know, zero trades trade for 500 ETH. We're seeing movement across the collection and, you know, people are continue to buy the floor. People continue to buy at a premium. I mean, there are a very discrete number of projects that even in times where there is like this, you know, let's just call it like we were in a bear market, continue to persist with collection and collector and a collector base that forms around it. And punks is very much the leader in that category.
Yeah, 100%. Great community too. Like just the OG like community that's been around forever. All right, so let's talk about Crypto Dick Butts. This is a project that has been around for quite some time and has been one of the bigger meme projects, I would say, that has existed in the space. You know, big blue chip collectors like 6529 and others commenting. I remember 6529 had a whole thread on why Crypto Dick Butts and the memification of art and NFTs is a powerful force. So, you know, this is a project that recently said that they are going to be turning control over of the project, the Twitter accounts, like all the smart contracts, to someone that actually wins via having points multipliers based on your previous holdings of Crypto Dick Butts. So if you hold a series one, meaning the very first Crypto Dick Butt, you get a 5x points. Series 2, it looks like 5x as well. Series 3, 2x. And then Series 4, the latest, is 1x. All of the points will be tallied at the end of... Amanda, do we know? 30 days after the conclusion of the S4 Mint. That's right. And then that holder or group or whoever it may be that owns that many... Oh, my... How many does Flamingo own?
It's a good question. We don't have a ton.
Okay.
I don't think we would be in the running to be the top owner.
I'd be curious to know, is there any analytics that you can click on that page at a Curiosity CT? Yeah, I know if you click on the analytics tab, it should show who the top holders are. Just out of curiosity, how many does the top holder have? But while you're looking that up, you know, there is a chance to actually go in and own one of the more iconic projects in the space, at least in the meme space, you know?
Yeah. I think that's right. And I think this news was paired with a drop, which was the season 4 of the Crypto Dick Butts project. Yeah, I think it happened on Sundays when I first started kind of coming across it. And the project was this old retro first-person shooter Doom-style game, browser-based game, where you were dropped into a tunnel with a gun. There was these Jack Butcher Twitter checks that came to attack you. You had to defeat them. You had to navigate through an empty field into a church where you saw a baby on an altar with the face of Sam Bankman-Fried. You had to sacrifice the baby in order to mint season 4. It was a very playful, fun, just like mint mechanic.
Did you play the game?
I played the game.
Did you get past Jack the Butcher?
I did. I got past. The game wasn't that hard. I mean, if you've been playing games, this wasn't...
Did you mint?
I couldn't get myself to mint. So, like, I think the mint price was 0.07 or 0.08 ETH, and I didn't really understand what was going on with the project. And I also, you know, I'm not trying to own Crypto Dick Butts. So, once I got in...
You own one?
I don't own one.
How dare you?
No.
Wow.
Derek.
CDB.
Derek.
Well,
Amanda, Eli, how many crypto dick butts do you guys own?
I own zero. But I had to.
Yeah.
I had to.
You know what? I appreciate CDB more than I want to own a CDB.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think that's what happened.
You know what's funny is Amanda and I, in many respects, bonded
yes.
over crypto dick butts.
Yes.
As one does.
As one does, as one is meant to do. But like a year and a half ago, and we were both very deeply immersed in the crypto dick butt community
yeah.
for a long time and very active
yes.
in the Discord.
Yes.
I think we've maybe taken a little bit of a step back
yeah.
in the last 6 months.
Did you sell yours?
I did sell mine.
I sold mine too.
Oh my God.
I sold
mine too. I'm
moved
the only
on.
One. CT, do you have a CDB? No?
No CDB holders.
Okay, I'm the only one
wow.
that has one. So I have
Kevin's
one.
Kevin's the most legit.
And it was kindly gifted to me. And so I
it's
I still
cool.
have one.
I love this project. I also love a lot of the collectors of this project. It,
yes.
It,
yes.
Like, the whole thing is cool. It's awesome. It's just like not where I'm. It's not like a desire of mine to like really like throw a bunch of capital at the CDB collection, but I appreciate it and I love it and I love the people that are part of it. I don't. So I guess my big question here that I would love resolved, if anyone has an idea, is like, is this so? When you so presumably, like, you know, a non-trivial amount of ETH was generated when they sold these season 4 crypto
right.
dick butts. Is that capital going as part of the transition?
We don't know.
Or is the owners just taking it?
See, this is the big controversy, not a big controversy, but it could potentially be something that we need an answer to, which is, it looks like there was close to $1 million in
yeah.
the latest mint
yep.
in terms of ETH that was
like
collected.
Like 400 or 500 ETH or something.
Yeah, something like that,
yeah.
right? So if that capital goes with the new acquirer, then, you know, it changes the whole valuation of how you go and like actually how much
yes.
you spend into the project
totally.
To gain more of these, to buy up more of these, to potentially have a run at owning the project. But I have to imagine it's probably not going with
it. Did I don't like if you look at the chart, if we flip back to it, CT, it says that I think you get control of the multisig or
Yeah,
whatever.
You get control, but is there anything in the multisig
that's
by
a
the
great
time
question.
You switch over?
I think
that's the
is,
question.
These are the questions
yeah.
I think
yeah.
I would need to resolve before I got really excited about participating.
Well, it's interesting in that, like, even if the founders did take the ETH, like, I don't consider that a bad thing. I mean, they made the latest series.
Yep.
They sold it as artists
I think
do.
That's fair. Yeah.
And they took ETH as artists too,
yeah.
and they decided to walk away.
I think that's fair. I think because there is a transition of ownership, that it should at least be articulated whether or not they are taking it or not.
Yeah.
If they had said somewhere like, you know, this is our fee for having built this awesome project that we now want to be community run, and like there was opt-in when people were minting it, because like it, with that in mind, I think that would be one thing. But I think because it's unclear... Right, I think that's kind of where my questions are
yeah.
around what's going on here surface.
We'll find out more, and the CDB saga will continue. It says
like
questions
them.
Will be answered in the Discord on their website, so I guess we'll have to
1B,
head to
1B,
the Discord.
I see a comment. I do see a comment here that actually might be good.
Okay.
It says, the S4 Mint, that's for Daddy. Daddy is the founder and artist of Dick Butts. So this person says, S4 Mint is for Daddy, but there's still a lot of ETH in the CDB DAO, a few thousand ETH, actually. And this person says, Daddy says Mint funds for S4 are going to Cabo.
Thank you,
Let's
Daddy.
Fucking go. That's cool.
All right, respect. At least he
right,
feels like some transparency there.
Daddy
I'm done.
Daddy needs to get paid.
Daddy got
to
get paid.
Daddy needs to get paid.
Daddy got to get paid.
All right. Moving on. Yuga.
Moving on, Daddy.
New game. It's like Yuga is relentless in their dropping of
yeah.
media games.
Crushing
fun
it.
Fun ways just to keep the community engaged. Why, and you pointed this out off camera when we were chatting earlier, but it's like why they are building other side.
Mm-hmm.
This is an attention economy. I mean, Sam said it forever, and
totally.
It's like you got to own and hold that attention. And I think, I mean, who can compete with Yuga on this front? It's insane.
Totally. I think the other really interesting thing about this, so this is a third-party partner. So this was developed by Enway, I think is the name, which is a studio owned by Animoca. I think there's a couple of really cool things. The first is what I love about, so Yuga's building other side, as we all know. It's a much more 3D, immersive, like ambitious project with, you know, presumably over time there's going to be gaming experiences in there, UGC experiences in there. They're building out this like very technical world building exercise. But in the meantime, they're also dropping these very interesting casual games, like you say, that's getting people excited in the short to medium term. And I think the what that does is it generates revenue for them. It gets people locked into their ecosystem through these like very specific mini game or casual game experiences. It gives them a ton of data and analytics to like what's working. Like what does conversions look like for this type of experience? Or how much can we generate per user over the lifetime of them playing? Or, you know, what are the things, where are people dropping off in the game? How do we fix that in the future? And when you're getting that much feedback from these like very different games, like there's a tabletop game, there's a fighter game, there's you know, Legends of Mara, which is coming out, which is more of like a card strategy game. When you're getting that much feedback across a variety of different mini games, you're able to take all that feedback and imbue it back into your core product. And so there's I think they're just running a very sharp startup mentality around getting feedback, pivoting to what's right, while they're creating like this much larger experience in the background.
Yeah, and they're also getting distribution of the and usage of the Ape token.
Yes,
that is very important for them. When you're under scrutiny by the SEC, one of the things that you can do to protect yourself is decentralization of the actual asset itself, and use cases that you can point to and say, this isn't just a currency that we're speculating on for us. It is actually being used by others in the industry.
Yeah.
So that's as you'll see, and you, as you've seen over the last few months, there's a number of deals where they're using ApeCoin in pretty much anywhere and everywhere they can, because they need to build up that portfolio of usage for that defense, essentially.
Yeah, it's quite a bit. And I would say to that point, you know, ApeDAO, they have, I mean, it's a distribution mechanism for a lot of folks to participate in the ecosystem. That's not managed by Yuga anymore. It's not managed by the Bored Ape community. It's managed by, you know, a group of decentralized decision makers who were voted by community members that aren't on the Yuga payroll. So they've got this whole economy around the Ape token that's now being built from the ground up that sits largely aside from all of the work that they're doing incorporating this into third-party experiences, or the work that they're doing building other side, or the work that they're doing continuing to ship product around MeeBits and Bored Apes and Mutant Apes and all that stuff. So to your point, you can start to see this emergent community governing this token that largely sits aside from the efforts that you guys is doing on their own.
The piece of it that I really like is that they're going to do a revenue share for people that are submitting their mechs
for
into the
game.
Yeah, into this game, which is interesting. Like if their characters are, you know, are purchased in the game, they own or earn a portion of that revenue.
That's cool.
Which is it could be a fun model. I mean, it's worth kicking the tires on all these and just see what sticks. And and it's clear they're doing that here, which is fantastic.
They also, I think CT flagged this, they bought or they announced this week that they acquired another company. I think this is maybe their fourth or fifth acquisition, Roar Studios, a music and metaverse startup. It sounds like a couple of the key employees from Roar are now going to be running other side projects on the experience and gaming side. So very cool. We'll see what that looks like here as well here as time goes on.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear that they've carved out this niche for themselves as being these mini games / bigger metaverse experience. And, you know, it's something we're going to need to see from all major PFP, like, companies. They need to come out there and say who we are and what we stand for.
Yep.
I think we'll see more of that in the coming months.
Yeah, agree. Very cool.
All right. Eli.
Okay. Yes. But before this.
Amanda.
Okay.
Before this, before he goes on to Mitchell, I know everyone is here to listen to the Mitchell interview, and I'm excited to listen to it too. I want to give everyone some time because I think I've picked kind of a hard question for the trivia. So I want you guys to give you guys enough time to do this. I'm going to say the trivia question. We're going to just give the gift of the Grails Mint Pass to the first person who answers, right? And then we will just announce that winner after Eli's interview, okay? So if you guys are ready, here is the trivia question so you guys can do some research here. All right, so every season, we always have a couple or at least one person who's done their first NFT ever. They're an artist, but they've never, or whatever, they just have never released anything on the blockchain. In season 2, there was one artist with their Genesis NFT, okay? We need the name of that artist and the name of that actual piece of artwork. And whoever gets that one first, yes, of course you do. Whoever gets that one first will win a Grails Mint Pass, and we will announce that winner live right after Eliza's interview. So good luck.
I love some of these answers I'm seeing already in the chat. Remember, season two.
Name
I see
of the
season
art.
One.
I see three. Name of the art and the artist together in one line. I need to see that first person who wins that one. You get a mint pass.
I love
and
that.
If you can dox them, you get a bonus pass. Just
yeah.
Kidding. Just kidding. No, just kidding. We're not doxing anyone.
Okay. Good luck, everyone, and we'll see who wins. You guys are all getting it wrong. You guys aren't even just Googling it. Nice.
I see it.
There we go. I already see it.
Don't
I
announce
it
yet.
But I won't announce it yet. Cool. Keep guessing, guys.
All right. Should we get into the interview?
Yeah,
with
over to
Mitch?
You, Eli.
Yes.
Let's see
Mitch.
I don't see Mitchell with me quite yet. Just waiting for him to join. CT, do we know if Mitchell's... There he is.
Hi.
Mitchell, how you doing?
Oh, I'm great, Eli. It's nice to see you. Long time coming, eh? Long time coming.
Yeah, I like, and you dropped the A, which is the giveaway that you're a fellow Canadian off the top. So I appreciate that.
Man.
Yeah. Well, Mitchell, it's great to have you here.
The most embarrassing self-docs ever. Such a self-docs.
It's so great to have you here, Mitchell. You know, we've been talking about doing this for some time. We spent some time together in Europe not long ago, and that was wonderful. I mean, you have such an interesting purview and lens on everything that's happening in this space. You have an upcoming project, Boys of Summer, that I definitely want to talk about. But let's go all the way back, Mitch, to start. You released one of the sort of very first NFTs in 2017. And before that, you had this long history of really engaging collectors and audiences around technology and art. Give us a little sense of sort of your practice pre-NFTs and then how that ultimately led to 2017 first engaging with the blockchain.
Absolutely. Thank you. So I've been a new media artist, I suppose is what we used to call it, for a long time, I guess since 2006, which means that, you know, I create art using technology and I create art about technology. And more specifically about the effect that technology has on our society and in our lives. And as a sort of like itinerant art and tech guy, that's what you're doing. You're going around, you're looking at the world evolve, you're looking at technology shape the world, and you're thinking there's probably an interesting connection here to the bigger world. And my job as an artist is to tell that story and make that connection. And so, you know, a lot of the work that I had done early in my career was physical computing, a little bit of coding stuff, some like, you know, robotics and kinetic stuff. But in 2017, there is this technology that is clearly becoming influential in the world. And that means that it clearly says something about the society that we're living in today. And that technology is blockchain. And it's this fascinating thing, right? I mean, if this is this technology that turns the notion of value into something that is immaterial and that has like no referent in the real world or something. And the fact that this is influential and gaining purchase in the world, it says something about us and what could that be? And so, you know, you open by talking about my unique purview on this whole scene. And it all comes from this, which is that I come to crypto from an artist perspective, trying to use art to understand what crypto is. And I realized that crypto actually makes a lot of sense if you're a conceptual artist. Conceptual art has been trying to quantify and give some sort of physical referent to things that are immaterial, like and not of this world for a long time. And I realized that I can explain crypto as a conceptual art project. And so I make one and I make a token, and that token ends up being, you know, non-fungible, because that's like what you have to do if it's going to be a unique artwork, right? I mean, I wasn't setting out to like do anything like that. It was just the necessity of making art that would be sold as a token. And everything kind of came from that. That was my entry to it. That was my first project. That project, you know, was called The Digital Zones of Immaterial Pictorial Sensibility. And it all kind of started there.
I love it. And great name. Mitchell, you also called that project IKB. Is that right? Or am I getting that wrong?
Yeah, IKB was the token tracker for the token that came out originally, right, in 2017. But it's also a reference to the inspiration for that project. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I was trying to explain crypto as a conceptual art project, and I find that art history has a number of really good examples that would help people wrap their mind around like the conceptual proposition that is crypto. But the best example that I could find was one from 1958 by a French artist named Yves Klein, who was most famous for getting a patent on his own shade of blue, which he called International Klein Blue, or IKB. Mm. So that was always the token tracker symbol for the artwork.
I love it. And when you release that work, Mitchell, and then we'll track ahead a little bit and talk more broadly about the space as well. When you release that work, who were you releasing it at that time for? I mean, the notion of collecting something like this didn't really exist yet. Who was the audience for that work initially?
So boy, did I ever, I ended up having this really backwards. I presented this project, I unveiled this project almost exactly 6 years ago. It was August 30th, 2017 at a new media art gallery here in Toronto, InterAccess Electronic Media Arts Center. And, you know, what I think is like, this is a great way to present crypto to art people as a conceptual art proposition, right? And this is, I'm going to talk to art people about crypto. All right. Mm-hmm. And make the connection from that end. And so I do this lecture, this presentation, and there's a part of this explaining how a crypto wallet works. And, you know, we set up our wallets, we get out, and we mint the first batch like that night in 2017. At least a few do. Right. And then, of course, like that just wasn't really a popular story at that time. There wasn't really a reason for art people to care about crypto at that time. Right. So the project sort of died, and I returned to my, you know, happy relative obscurity. Right. And then actually, like, what ends up happening is 2020, as you know, NFTs have picked up pace, and there's a number of people who are, you know, really motivated to go scour the blockchain and find early artifacts, you know, and they discover this is one of the first, you know, fine art tokens that you can actually buy in its original form. But more astonishing is that, you know, more than just the sort of collectability of it, that audience there was actually really willing to hear the story. They were willing to read like this really long essay that I wrote about it. And hearing about, you know, explaining conceptual art through the lens of crypto actually ended up being a better story with a better audience.
Yeah, that made sense. Let's riff on that for a moment, Mitchell. In most of your works, and you just alluded to it there, you include really robust writing and context around the work. I think it was this work that had a 33-page essay. You know, it's like that seems fundamental to the work you do. Talk about that for a moment. Why do you think robust context around your artworks is so fundamental?
Well, yeah, that word context, I mean, it's everything to me. And to me, it's a really fundamental part of all artworks. And it's the part of an artwork that is most, I would say, at risk, under threat in this sort of like high velocity, high liquidity art world that we are creating right here in NFTs. But ultimately, it comes down to this, right? Which is that, you know, an artwork is sort of, you know, placeholder, a symbol for an idea or some sort of sentiment or some sort of value system. And so the sincerity of that statement, I think, really matters, especially as the tools that we use to create art become more and more automated. And this is a good thing, by the way. It is great that there are any number of approaches that an artist can take to make something. But what it means is that you maybe have to invest less and less of your time to produce an AI output, or, you know, or going all the way back to a urinal that you put in a gallery, right? That amount of effort is no longer the proof of legitimacy, the proof of sincerity. Because if you have an idea and it's like, okay, sure, you have an idea or opinion, everybody has them, right? Like, ideas and opinions on their own honestly don't have that much value. How sincere are you? How much do you mean this? And you can prove it by effort, or you can prove it by working to establish the context of your idea, saying, this isn't a one-off thing. I truly believe in this. I've been building up this thesis throughout my career. There's a certain requisite amount of effort put into it. And I've taken the time to understand the repercussions of what I do. And I think that's an important thing in art. And I think it's going to be even more important as we're more inundated with AI art, generative art, things like this. All things that are good, but you want to contextualize them as well.
Right. Let's pull on that thread just a little bit further, Mitchell. In terms of sequencing of context, let's talk about that for a moment. You and I were riffing yesterday on this notion of grails, right? Where you, the collector, the audience has very little context at the beginning, and then we do our best to provide full context about the artist and the artwork on that reveal moment. And if we use the example of the urinal in terms of sequencing of context, you know, there is a world where you let the audience engage wholly with the urinal with no context at all. And then after that first moment of engagement, provide that additional context. Talk to me, I mean, do you have a perspective on sequencing of that additional context in an artwork and in the engagement of an artwork?
Yeah, that's a really interesting idea. And it's actually really interesting you put that in the context of the Grails project, right? Because, of course, that separation of context and then reattachment to it. I just said that context is the most important thing, which means that it's also a material that you can play with. And so splitting it apart and putting it together really intentionally, actually an interesting thing to do with an artwork. And I can talk about it in that early example of the urinal, or we can talk about it in the Grails project. Start with the urinal, right? Actually, Duchamp does that very intentionally. Recall, he signs the urinal with a false name. He signs the urinal with the name Armut. That's a deliberate miscontextualization of the work. And this is important. He knows what's going to happen. He's thought through this. Mm-hmm. Because when that artwork was rejected from the salon that he submitted it to, he has this letter to the editor ready to go. Okay, this guy is playing chess a couple moves ahead of time. And so this letter indicates this is actually why it was important. This is why you should have accepted it. This is why your decision is totally invalid, right? He knows. He separated the context, let the experiment happen, let it have its desired effect. Then he reattaches the context. So I'm not here to say that, you know, Grails is the next Duchamp. We're not, like, you know, that's not what I'm trying to say. What I'm saying is that the separation and reattachment of that is important. And so the separation of context, you know, because I think that's a super fascinating project, taking the name off of the artwork and letting people see it. It does something else interesting, which is that without the context of the artist and their whole career and their history of sincerity behind them, the viewer, pre-mint, has to look at these from a strictly formal point of view. Okay, their analysis of it is strictly formal. And I know that's your intention and that's the fun of it, even separate from market considerations. And that is something, I think that's an interesting thing to do because it's something that I think happens not often enough in the like traditional art world. Like there's just not enough of just looking and formal analysis. And it's something that I think actually happens a little bit too much in the NFT world, right? And so to separate it and put it back together, it's an interesting technique.
Yeah, yeah, appreciate that, Mitchell. Let's take a slightly different path. You know, you were drawing these parallels or putting the traditional art world in dialogue with the things we're doing here. I'd be curious for your perspective because you've played across those two dimensions in such a real way. Do you think the traditional art world and those institutions are fundamental to the credibility and the validity of the things we're doing here? Do you see people pandering too much to those institutions? Are they pandering or are they appealing to the wrong institutions and rather than the very large MoMA, LACMA, maybe it's sort of the mid-sized small institutions and the new media institutions who are willing to play on the edges a bit more that we should be working more closely with? What's your sense of how artists like yourself are, and of course you don't speak for all artists, I wouldn't ask you to do that, but your perspective on how to engage with the traditional art world?
Sure, and I'll preface this by saying that I love the traditional art world. I've learned a lot from it, and I admire and respect its institutions and people who work in them a lot. And for me, you know, they're a goal. They're an important part of my life. They're an important part of how I understand the world. I'd say that for most NFT artists, I think there's too much emphasis on it, right? It is like it can only provide validation if you allow it to. And you have to understand that like these museums don't exist to stay like as this filter that stamps what is good and what is bad. Too many people make that mistake. They decide if you make a sneaker, but you make the best sneaker, you make the Air Jordan 1, a museum will come and stamp that and then that'll be art. And like, no, that's not it at all, man. It's still a sneaker. It's just the best sneaker. That's awesome, right? What museums do is tell a story. And if the story that they're telling is not your story, it could mean a couple of things. Sure, it could mean that your story is just not interesting to the museum going public,
yeah.
Or it could just mean that's just not the story that they're telling right now. Like, that's fine. Yeah. And I can talk a lot more about, you know, the collectors and artists who have engaged those institutions, for artists who I think have made it explicit that they want to be a part of that story. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a really positive thing. My whole thing, like from this very kind of unique vantage point that I'm at, is I obviously believe in the mixing of these two communities. I believe that these groups have a lot to learn from each other. But you know, in crypto, you know, they say like, you know, 1 year in crypto is like 10 years in any other business, but it means that we also expect like 1 year of accumulation of cultural value in crypto to be equivalent to like a decade of accumulation of cultural value to the outside world. Right. And they may not be on the same schedule, and that's fine. Yeah. And it's actually really healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. That totally makes sense to me, Mitch. Let's talk for a moment. And then I absolutely want to spend some time on Boys of Summer, your upcoming release. Let's talk a little bit, about your relationship with generative art and your project. I think it's Soul Lewitt Generator. For those who do not get that context, can you just describe very briefly sort of Soul Lewitt, but also your interpretation, of him and his work in the Art Blocks release that you had?
Sure. So, you know, as you know, a lot of work that I've done is attempting to draw a link between existing and old art practices and crypto, because I see a lot of parallels. We can learn a lot from each other. In a nutshell, right? Saul Lewitt is another early conceptual artist who in the 60s has this idea that his art will be a drawing on the wall. Except he will not do the drawing on the wall, and he will not sell you a chunk of drywall that he's cut out of his studio with a drywall knife. What he'll do is he'll give you a set of instructions on how to make the drawing, and your museum staff can do it. And as long as you have that certificate with the instructions on it and his signature, it's valid. It's a fair thing. And there are two ways that this relates to crypto, one of which I think, you know, a lot of people discovered, but it's still interesting, which is the connection between a set of instructions as art and an algorithm as art. It's basically the same thing, right? But what I am more interested in is the commodity form that he's selling. The idea that, no, he didn't cut out the drywall with a drywall knife and put it in a truck and send it to the museum, that the certificate of authenticity has this ability. It is imbued with the ability to designate something else as authentic, right? That is the interesting idea for me, because to me, that's tokenization, right? The token, my NFT token, says that whatever I put in this hash or in this IPFS link, or maybe I don't even, right? I assert this just through my authority as an artist, as someone that you trust and believe in, and then I, you know, put it on blockchain as a statement of my intent, that is now valid as my thing. So that's the interesting story for me. You can take that two different ways, right? Instructions as art, or certificate of certificate of authenticity as fiat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the way that you've explored the medium with these art historical concepts, and you know, everything you do, Mitchell, has this deep conceptual nature, which I find most interesting. Let's talk now about your upcoming release, The Boys of Summer. Again, you're playing with all these different notions of crypto and the conceptual dimension and what's possible with the medium itself, which wouldn't have been possible previously. You're engaging the audience and collectors and participants in a really deep way with this project. Walk us through some of the things here that we should keep in mind about The Boys of Summer.
Well, you know, let me just hold you right there, Eli, because I'm glad you appreciate my conceptual deep thoughts. You know, that means a lot to me. But unfortunately, it doesn't really turn everyone's crank. The conceptual stuff, it's a tough sell for a lot of the market out there, especially during a bear. So let me put your mind at ease. This is a project about baseball. Good old fashioned American baseball. All right. This is how it works. Okay. There's actually multiple parts of this project. Okay. Piece. And there is one unique one of one art game token. And most people, of course, because there's 999 of them and only one art game token, will engage with the project by getting one of these PFPs. And the PFPs are, I don't know if you have it up on the screen or you will, you know, they're,
yeah, we can pull
yeah I think they're nice PFPs. I'm really proud of them. They're fun. They embody a lot of the PFP tropes. I made them with a lot of love and respect for my friends who are OG PFP collectors, right? And when you get that PFP, they're different from other PFPs in one specific way, which is that they have no attribute metadata attached. You won't be able to sort OpenSea and see if they have hats or glasses or anything like that. You just get a name and a position, say shortstop, all right? You get Eli, shortstop. But then you connect to this game, the game also called The Boys of Summer. And if you connect with your wallet, you can use your character in the game. And, you know, the character's animated and they're fun. There's like a photo mode. So if you want to like snap a pic at a different camera angle, you can do that. And the game is sort of an RPG. You log in and the first thing you have to do is choose your jersey number. And then the next thing you have to do is put some points and attributes like hitting, fielding, throwing, stuff like that, right? And there's a gameplay loop that should feel really familiar to anybody who's been in crypto, which is you make a few decisions and then you watch numbers go up or down. Okay? You make some decisions and you watch numbers go up and down. So you're going to love this. You're going to love it. Okay? You got a lot of practice at this game.
Yeah.
But the numbers that you choose eventually become less and less about baseball. All right? And the numbers that pop up that go up and down eventually become less and less about baseball. They become your SAT score. And then they become your net worth and your employment income. Eventually, they become really, really personal numbers. And this is the game. You just keep on putting in numbers, numbers in, numbers out, numbers in, numbers out. Until you get to this quantified self stuff. You know, this. You've seen any of this quantified self, these people who are measuring how much. Yeah, right. And then you measure like what is your pancreatic elastase. You have like 50 different data points to determine like how healthy you are, right? And so it all comes up until your screen is just full of these pop-up numbers. And then, right, and that is sort of the game. And the thing that was happening, and this is the final phase of the project, is that I know, you know, I was sort of joking around with you. I say this is a baseball game, but it's actually this networked performance piece about the quantification of self and data as commodity. And as you're playing, all that data gets saved to your PFP. And now it's on there on the marketplace. And everybody's sorting through all your PFPs, seeing how many home runs you hit, but also like what was your net worth, what was your SAT score, and all that stuff.
It's so cool, Mitch. And I love the way you kick us off with, it's just a baseball project. It's just a baseball story. But there really are these different layers, and it's a real commentary on what a PFP is and the way we engage with this space and with our identity and quantified self dimensions as well. Mitch, give us the details on sort of the drop date, anything you can provide there as we wrap up here.
Drop date is on August 16th. It's on wild.xyz. I joked about this being a baseball game because there's a ton of Wild.xyz has done an amazing job putting out some great videos and essays that about the fact that this is secretly like kind of the deepest like conceptual project I've done so far. But there's a lot to just have fun with. So you can check all that information out on Wild.xyz. Get on the allow list, which I really am encouraging people to do at this point. And there's a whole lot more to learn.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, Mitch. When we were together in Europe, you were breaking this down for me in person, and I'm super excited for it. Appreciate you coming on, Mitch, and excited to spend some time together in person in Toronto soon enough, hopefully. But appreciate the time.
Thanks, Eli. I appreciate it too.
Okay, we'll talk soon.
Yeah, Mitch is awesome. I really loved his take on how fast people perceive culture to accumulate in Web3, but the outside world actually doesn't. You know, it's like we all think this massive culture is being built up, but really it's going to take a lot longer, and it turns out the real world needs time to catch up. Totally. So it was a great interview. Thanks, Eli. All right. Well, we have the Mint Pass giveaway. Is Amanda back with you, Eli?
She is. She is. Amanda,
the
come
camera.
Over here.
Okay, hold on. Oh my God.
Get over here.
All right.
What a crazy.
Let's go.
As you can tell, we're a little short staffed today. I am not in focus. Hayden is mortified. He's dying. He's figuring it out. Oh, there we go. All right. Well, first, before I give the answer or the winner, I want to say that I got a very, very important update about Crypto Dick Butt Season 4.
What is it?
From thegoldeneel.eth. He's one of our holders in Discord. He tagged me. He showed me a little preview of what S4 is actually kind of revealing to. So that's what the dots are all about. And I can see it faintly. It says Gooch Island Passport. So, Kevin, I was telling you about Gooch Island, about this was like their main goal is to try to get a real island. And I don't know, maybe there's something there, something more to learn about what season 4 is all about. So it's actually kind of exciting. Now I'm a little bit more plugged in, so that's cool. But without further ado, you know, thank you all so much for playing. Mm-hmm. I did see that Sketch was the first person to answer the first Genesis NFT in season 2 was My Mother the Sun by Cashpour.
That's cool.
Who is an amazing you know, tattoo artist IRL, and this was her first NFT, and I think are we gonna bring her here at Foundry, maybe do a little tattoo session? What do you think?
We've been talking about it.
Should we do that? Maybe.
Yeah.
That's Kevin's friend, so we'll see if we can bring her out here.
She was.
I got a chance to meet her.
She's the one that did the Moonbirds tattoo.
Yeah, and she did my tattoo too, actually.
Yeah.
In New York, so
let's see it.
Oh yeah.
It's the Crypto Dick Butts one, right?
A guava tree, a strawberry guava tree for my son on the day that he was he was going to be born, and he was like 4 days late. But this is a little guava tree. It's got three guavas. Me, my son, and my husband. It's just a beautiful thing. And Jess was just so amazing to do that for me.
She's
so
awesome.
I think we should have some more memories here at Foundry with Jess, with Cashpour. Congrats, Sketch. Send us your wallet, and Eli will send that over to you.
Amanda, congrats. One question for you.
Yes.
Real talk, how much for a Crypto Dick Butts tattoo on your other forearm? Just throw it out there. ETH terms.
ETH? 500 ETH, I think.
No,
yes.
Come on.
I'm not getting a freaking dick butt on my body. Absolutely not.
500 ETH?
500 ETH, yes. The cost of one bald punk.
That's a lot.
Yeah, I'm not going to put a dick on my body.
I thought you would do for like maybe like
20
ETH.
No. No. All right. No, baby. All right. This is precious real estate.
People have done all kinds. I've seen Cryptodes tattoos.
I have.
I think I've seen
a punk tattoo. I think we saw one squiggle tattoo at one point.
Moonbird's tattoo. Not Justin and I, but another person.
Moonbird's tattoo. I want to see a Crypto Dick Butts season 4 tattoo. That's what I really
want to
see.
Is
with all this terrible.
There is somebody, I think it's Tom, Beautiful Dick Butts. I think he has a clean dick butt on his butt. Pretty sure.
Wow.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Amazing.
That's one the partner just loves.
Yeah. That's not me.
All right. Well, that was it for the show. If you can't tell, we were a little understaffed because we are preparing for Grails.
Yes.
And there is a lot of people that are missing today because we are heads down editing, producing, getting ready for that
big
launch.
It's going to be epic. It's going to be so epic. I don't think people know how much resources you guys have put into Grails. The thoughtfulness, the time, the artist that you're working with, the production value, it keeps leveling up. It's so fun to have been there and watched it get to this fourth season. This one's going to be awesome.
I can't wait to see a rough cut of it here soon. I'm very, very excited.
Totally.
So awesome. Well, thanks everyone for being on the show, and a big special thanks to Mitchell F. Chan. Be sure to check out Boys of Summer on wild.xyz on August 16th. And catch 100 Proof Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific, except next week, because
Grails,
that is when we're going to be doing the Grails.
Grails, let's go. Grails, let's go.
Grails, let's go.